First of all, although the toxicity of lead has been known for thousands of years, lead remains one of the most common environmental health threats to children. Lead exposure has been linked to lifelong negative effects, health, cognitive, and behavioral effects, and no level of lead has been found to be safe. There are many sources of lead, such as contaminated soil, lead dust accidentally brought home from a parent's workplace, lead in plumbing, and others. However, deteriorated lead paint in homes is the main source of lead exposure for U.S. children. Sorry about that. So while lead levels have been declining nationally, some children continue to be exposed to harmful levels of lead in their homes and elsewhere. For the purposes of responding to lead exposure, a reference value of 5 micrograms per deciliter has been used since 2011 and is the cut point for a child to have an elevated blood lead level, or EBLL, referred to as lead exposure in this presentation. While the national prevalence of lead exposure is estimated to be around 1%, the prevalence has been shown to be highly variable both between and within states. And some of this variation can be explained by the distribution of individual risk factors such as residing in older housing and poverty. Then associations between risk factors and elevated blood lead levels have also been demonstrated to vary both between and within states. So accurate knowledge of lead exposure prevalence at small spatial scales is necessary to efficiently target efforts to prevent lead exposure. So blood lead surveillance relies on the routine screening of children's blood lead levels, and while the screening is targeted in Minnesota to children with established risk factors, about 80% of all Minnesota children receive at least one blood lead test prior to their third birthday. And blood lead test results are required to be reported to the Minnesota Department of Health for surveillance purposes, as well as to coordinate the public health response for each child with lead exposure. Over the years 2011 through 15, over 330,000 children received at least one blood lead test, and about 3,700 had confirmed elevated blood lead levels. The percent elevated in approximation of prevalence was 1.1%. But there was substantial geographic variability in the prevalence estimate. This figure shows a histogram of the 1,332 census tracts in Minnesota with the prevalence of lead exposure during 2011 through 15 on the x-axis and the number of census tracts on the y-axis. At the tract scale, the prevalence ranged from 0.0% to 11.9%, with a median of 0.5%. This distribution indicates that the burden of lead exposure is not equally spread throughout the state and is largely concentrated in a few small geographic areas. In fact, nearly half of lead exposure cases occurred in the tracts in the top 10th percentile of tract prevalence. However, as with most surveillance data, as we look at smaller geographic areas, our estimates become more imprecise. In this case, due to small numbers of children tested throughout the five-year period in many census tracts. This figure shows a histogram of the census tracts in Minnesota with the number of children tested for lead during 2011 through 15 on the x-axis and the number of tracts on the y-axis. To estimate a tract prevalence as statistically significantly lower than the statewide prevalence of 1.1%, a minimum of 271 children would need to be tested, and nearly 70% of tracts tested had fewer than 271 children, or all the tracts to the left of the red line here on this histogram. Therefore, many of the observed prevalence estimates may be too imprecise for practical utility. To increase our confidence in our estimates, we combined tract prevalence data with tract level risk factor data, and our goals were to predict tract level prevalences from tract level risk factors and to examine the differences between the observed and modeled prevalence. However, our goal was not to find the best fitting model from all available potential risk factors. Instead, we used only region, housing age, and poverty metrics as covariates in the model, allowing the difference between the modeled and observed prevalences to be interpreted as an indicator of some additional factor influencing observed prevalence. First, the observed tract prevalences were estimated through blood lead test results reported to MDH between 2011 through 15. The tract of residence was determined by geocoding the address reported with the highest confirmed test, and approximately 90% of children had an address reported that could be geocoded to the tract scale. Tract level risk factors were estimated through the Census Bureau's 2011 through 15 American Community Survey. These included the percent of houses built prior to 1950 and an index measure of socioeconomic deprivation, as well as the general region of this tract within the state. An ecologic generalized linear regression model was then fit to estimate the lead exposure prevalence for each tract based on the measured risk factors and their global or statewide association with lead exposure prevalence. Starting with the geographic distribution, this map shows the observed prevalence estimates at the tract scale. Color coding corresponds to the difference between the tract prevalence observed and the statewide prevalence of 1.1%. Much of the state is in the green no difference category due to the imprecision of many of the tract estimates. However, a pattern is visible of a concentration of the blue high prevalence tracts in the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, seen in the center of the metro region map on the right, as well as a scattering of high prevalence tracts primarily in the southwest region of the state. Yellow tracts with observed prevalences significantly lower than the state prevalence were primarily in the suburban metro area, and the pattern is similar to that seen in maps of housing and poverty risk factors. Examining the model, all three risk factors were independent predictors of prevalence. By region, a tract's location in the cities of Minneapolis or St. Paul increased its prevalence twofold relative to rural tracts, independent of housing age or poverty. Tracts in the suburban area and cities outside the metro area also had higher risk independent of poverty and housing age than tracts in the rural areas. Independent of poverty and region, prevalence increased as the percent of houses built prior to 1950 increased, with a 2.6-fold increase between the highest and lowest quintile. Also independent of housing age and region, prevalence increased as the socioeconomic deprivation increased, with a 2.8-fold increase between the highest and lowest quintile. The model estimated prevalence are shown on this map, color-coded by their difference from the statewide prevalence. On the whole, these estimates were much more precise than the observed prevalence, resulting in fewer tracts being classified as not different due to estimate imprecision, although the two estimates are not directly comparable. The pattern again shows a concentration of high prevalence tracts in the inner metro region as well as the southwest of the state. Turning to the comparison of the modeled and observed prevalences, the scatter plot shows the association between the two. Each point represents one census tract, with the observed prevalence on the x-axis and the modeled prevalence on the y-axis. The red line would represent perfect agreement. The points above the red line represent tracts where the model overpredicted the observed prevalence, while points under the red line represent tracts where the model underpredicted the observed prevalence. On a whole, the model fit the data reasonably well, explaining about 50% of the variation in observed prevalences. However, it did have a tendency to underestimate tracts with a very high observed prevalence in the 7 to 12% range. Comparing the geographic distributions of the observed and modeled estimates, we can see a pattern of lower risk in rural areas as more pronounced in the modeled estimates. There were 880 tracts, or two-thirds of all tracts, that were observed to have point estimates lower than 1%, but too few children tested to say with confidence that the prevalence differed from statewide. A large majority of these were also estimated by the model to have low prevalences, lending support to the conclusion that these tracts really did have prevalences less than 1%. And then within the metro area, the patterns are similar as well, with clusters of high and very high tracts in the inner metro and low prevalence tracts in the surrounding suburbs. In addition to adding evidence to imprecise observed estimates, the difference between modeled and observed prevalences can also be examined to identify tracts where factors other than housing age and poverty may be influencing the observed prevalence. On this map, red tracts had an observed prevalence significantly greater than the modeled prevalence, and blue tracts had an observed prevalence significantly lower than modeled. Factors contributing to this could be both related to the measurement and actual risk factors for lead exposure. For example, if high-risk children in the tract are not being screened appropriately, or low-risk children are being screened differently than elsewhere in the state, the observed prevalence would be expected to be lower than modeled. Likewise, if a tract has a large population with a risk factor unrelated to housing age or poverty, this could be shown as in a difference between the observed and modeled prevalences. This can identify specific areas where local investigation into blood lead screening practices and sources of lead exposure may be warranted. And then one example of where we have done this is in two census tracts in the outer metro region that were predicted to have very low prevalences, under 1%, with low poverty levels and few pre-1950 houses, but were observed to have prevalences in the 5 to 8% range. Further examination of census data showed nearly one-third of these tracts populations were born in Asia, and local investigations showed the tracts have large South Asian immigrant communities, and investigations of lead exposure cases showed common risk factors included recent travel or immigration from South Asian countries, as well as use of lead-containing cultural remedies and imported spices. And we plan to use this comparison to model and observe prevalence estimates to target areas for investigation and intervention.
See, I was right. Another outstanding presentation. A lot to learn here. Questions? We have plenty of time. I'll start off with one then.
Sure.
Really, like I said, fantastic. Did you consider any transformations at all, or statistical transformations, to look at that modeling? Because when you showed the observed and the expected, as you would expect, the variance appeared to increase as you went out with larger numbers of observed cases. And also that influence of the zero. There was a good handful of zero observed, which is going to be maybe a little problem with the model, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
Did you explore any transformations looking at, can't really look at rates, I guess, and with this data, but or log transformation? Any?
I haven't with this data, but it would definitely be worth looking into, especially at that lower level of the 0 to 1% prevalence area, if we wanted to really show differences within that area. But if we're looking at the higher prevalence areas, I don't know that the transformation would tell us a whole lot.
Perhaps not.
Yeah, this very, very interesting. Thank you for that presentation. You showed this for blood lead levels. And was this model, I guess, how specifically designed is this model for that one issue, or how exportable is it to modeling expected values for other health conditions and then tests against observed?
So I would say it would definitely depend on the other condition you're looking for. So with lead, we're looking at individual small areas can be very different from their neighboring areas, where aggregation might cover some of that up. For example, we have 7 of our high prevalence tracts. Highest prevalence tracts were located in very low prevalence counties, where I know that I've seen the tool more, I can see where we could, you know, use our case counts or do some aggregation based on the prevalence rather than just the total numbers tested or total numbers of kids in neighboring areas. I think it would be a useful model for other areas where we have established risk factors and where neighboring areas aren't necessarily related.
Have you looked at this with your screening data at all? So you know where the lead poison kids are because you have good surveillance data. So you sort of know in some ways where to do interventions already, instead that you've tested there. And the risk factors are sort of somewhat well known as well. But an interesting sort of possible would be, so now that we've done this, how does this match up with where we're screening, and can we identify areas where we predict risk factors when our screening is really low or lower than what we'd expect? So have you done any sort of analyses, and did anything jump out at you if you've done it to say, oh, there's an area we really need to target for screening more because we see the risk factors?
I would say I wish we had. That's definitely a next step. A problem is getting converting screening data into a percent tested at a tract scale when we don't have numbers of births per tract, but we have census populations. So translating census populations into numbers tested is where we, you know, just have to work out the method for that a little bit more.
You can just try births as a start.
If we had births at the tract scale, it'd be wonderful. And I'm sure we can do that with a little bit of partnership with the
Vital stats, folks. I was going to ask a question earlier, but sort of a follow-up. So it's not there's not universal lead screening then of
No.
newborns. Okay.
No.
So it's
it may be based on where the prevalence is high or other factors of mm-hmm. concerned parents or clinicians or whatever it may be in Minnesota.
Right. So with targeted screening, we recommend that children under the age of 6 get tested both at their first and second birthday if they have a risk factor, an established risk factor for lead exposure. And that's determined through a screening questionnaire in their provider's office. And then also included in that is asking questions just general, is the parent concerned about lead? Is there some other, you know, thing that we're missing with our questionnaire that might get them screened? But we do screen 80% of kids. So it's a large portion, but not. There's definitely areas that are down to 40% within the state, too.
Yeah, I looked at that issue years ago in New York and found that the area, even though we had universal screening, not all the kids were getting screened, mm-hmm. but the screening rates were much, much higher in the areas where they had the highest lead values, because they were the poor inner city areas. Doctors realized that, and you had to get screened for WIC and other programs. So, contrary to what people believe, it was those high socioeconomic suburban areas,
right?
They weren't getting screened. You know, the doctors were just missing it.
Yes.
But those houses are in better shape, too, so there's less high lead values in those families.
So those prevalences, though, are based on the risk factors to begin with. So, yeah, I would talk to the vital mm-hmm. stats folks.
Right.
That would be very useful. Yeah.
Well, you could estimate it with the census data, you know, what your screening rates are.
Get births? Yeah.
Well,
you
no,
could,
you know the number of 0 to 1-year-olds or 0 to 5-year-olds mm-hmm. and get a general idea of where the
right.
screening
yeah.
is going
yeah.
without the vital statistics data.
Next year.
Right.
Great.